On your pen. All right, so group therapy's over. Probably not, now that we're going to be in the afterburn. All right, so this is the afterburn for 37B. No, I'm kidding, for part 38. And so if you have a comment or question about what I just taught, you can raise your hand. Some of you are look like you're recovering from a train wreck, but that's okay. Live streamers, you know, Rob is back there kind of making note of things with Gary, so we got the live stream going. And so you can start doing that. And we got Paul's going to come around with the mic. And then I'm going to try to go back and forth a little bit today so the live stream doesn't get like left out. Okay? So we'll alternate. So get ready with one right after this first one. Okay, Shaquez is going to go first because Steve and Janet are now arguing about who doesn't go first now. Okay.
I have a comment and a question. The comment, going along with my prayer request for today, and it's remarkable how much what you say lines up with what I'm learning in trauma recovery, and that what you're saying is what I am taught in mindfulness. It's literally learning to be in reality, because you have to get yourself to be mindful of what you're thinking and observe it without reacting and be in the present. So thank you for that, and thank you for talking about how thoughts are things, because they're learning more and more. The trauma and the thoughts really are things, and they can be measured. You can measure it in your brain and in your body, how it gets stuck in there and it causes so many problems and the stress it puts on the body. So thank you for that as well.
You're welcome.
And
well, wait, before you go to the question, you got a question then?
Yes.
Okay, don't forget the question, but I want to address, for the first thing that you said, for everybody to hear this, okay, mindfulness is not, there's a step A before what she said, which is to be aware, and she said be aware but without reacting. No, I want you to be aware even when you are reacting, so at least you start to see yourself, because before you can be aware the way she said, you start off by at least being aware as you're doing it. Have an awareness that the event happened and then you triggered, and eventually you can be mindful enough to realize you can choose what to do. But in the beginning, at least be aware that you're choosing not to stop yourself from exploding or running or being afraid or being insane, whatever it is, right? So start off with the first thing, which is at least that awareness of what you're doing. Second step is to be aware that you can now choose. Okay? So I just want to make sure that for all of you, work with step one first. At least be aware of what you're doing. That you see yourself doing it and be like, wow, I can't believe how angry I am right now. Why am I this angry? I mean, you can't do the choice before that until you learn to at least be aware that you're doing it. Okay, just wanted to throw that out there. It's important. Okay, question.
I think you just answered it.
Okay, there you go.
There's an incredible amount of frustration when you've been doing this as long as I have.
Right.
To be like, okay, when am I going to be done? And I don't need to be in and out of some kind of therapy or something. So,
okay, so in step one, something's happening and you're aware of what's happening and your reaction to it. Step two, we're going to break this down into another step before you get to the third step, right? Before the actual, where you can choose. Step two is you're now aware of things that happened and you're seeing what's happening and you're seeing yourself respond. And because of your awareness, while you're responding, you can affect your level of response. So that's step two. Okay? Whatever just happens, making me panic. Okay? Well, now that I'm aware of that, maybe I can diminish the level of panic. Or it's making me angry, I can diminish the anger. Okay? Now, and then step three is where you would be like, the thing happened, and I get to choose what to do. So step one, you're just watching yourself do it. But you're aware. You're not just angry, you're aware that you're angry. You're like actually like outside watching yourself, you know, panic, feel insecure, want to run, want to throw something, want to whatever your emotional response is, right? So you're watching yourself. Step two, if it's not really what you know you should be doing, you should be able to affect the level of it. Okay, you'll start to, while it's already happening, you couldn't stop it, but maybe now I can deal with it to maybe even make it stop after it starts. Then in step three, So you can even make that step three where you actually stop it after it starts. And then finally, you get to the step where you have the choice, so you never go there in the first place. Okay?
And that's practice, patience.
Just takes time. But look, it's going to be a lot of fun for you to when you realize, wow, I can actually be aware of myself. The first step. Okay? So be aware of yourself in whatever situation you're in, and you're aware of what your feeling is, and you're aware that you don't like that feeling. That's not the feeling you want to have. And then the next level is that while you're aware, try to affect it. Change the feeling. Okay? At least shrink it down from the level it was at, right? Then the next step is to actually either change it or shut it off midstream. Okay, you saw something happen, or somebody said something, or somebody did something, and you went into this triggered reaction, but now that you're aware and you're already in the reaction, you can stop it. And then the last step would be to, before you actually react, catch yourself and realize, I don't want to go that way. There's other choices. Okay? So anybody counseling with Janet next week, that's what you're going to get. Okay, so. Okay. Just send that payment to me. Okay. Next, we'll give Janet the mic. And then we'll go to live stream. Because you guys are sitting right there together.
I really appreciate, Rabbi, what you taught us today. Really, really appreciate it. Because it really goes along with what I've been studying lately, which is I always try to find ways, better ways to help people. So I've been studying something called internal family systems, which talks about that, like the inner parts that you have that are in conflict and how to get them to a place where you want to get, right, with the peace and the good emotions. But I didn't know you were going to talk about this, because at least I think I did one of the three parts, maybe the second and the third, this morning. I was stuck in a place, in an emotional state that I didn't like. And I knew I had to get out from there, but it was hard because I was in my head. And as I started, it literally happened like a switch right away when I saw him, when I saw Yeshua, like you're telling us to do. Immediately my mind went into something else, and the emotion attached to that, the negative emotion, switched to a positive instantly. And that's so powerful that he gave us that, right? That connection and right. That the way. And it made me think about, you know, how you always teach us that, Yeshua is the way, right? The truth, the life. But I was thinking about the way. Well, he is the way. Of course, he's the Torah, is what we walk every day. But he's also, I mean, if I believe he is the way, I need to follow. I need to try to seek him and follow him in every single minute in my life, right? Especially right. In the times where I'm struggling. And I was thinking also about, there was 4 years ago, I remember reading about this priest who was a Catholic priest, and I know it wasn't the right way, but he ended up having a life where he could actually achieve that perfect shalom in his life. And I read his biography and what he was doing, and there is even a form of prayer that they follow, but what he was doing was exactly what you just asked us to do, which was really seeking him all the time. Obviously, seeking him without Torah is not seeking him, because that's not the truth. But now that we have the full package, right? We have the Torah, so we know how to recognize when it's not our thoughts, but it's his mind. Then we can really get to the greater results that we want in our lives. So I don't know. It's
that's
so
great.
Good what you're giving good. Us. It's amazing. And I have one question about fasting.
Okay, well, let me answer something for this first. All right. I'll give you another analogy that goes along with this that hopefully makes some sense, okay? You have to remember that when you first start doing this, this is the way the Ruach works with me. As I'm hearing stuff, I realize, that's why I love the afterburn. It gives me a chance to repackage or reclarify and add some stuff to things. You have to remember that when you're doing this observing yourself, right, this awareness thing, that initially you're going to feel like a passenger in the car. Okay? Because you're observing yourself. And you won't feel like you have a lot of authority or strength or anything. But you have to remember that the one doing the observing is the one that's supposed to be in charge. That's the one that's supposed to be driving. Okay? And so that's the one that should be able to shut the rest of the system down or change it to a positive thought or whatever it is. But initially, the observer, you being the observer of what you're doing, you're going to feel like you're just along for the ride and you're the passenger. Because the emotions will be driving, okay? But you have to keep reminding yourself, no, the part of me that's watching, that's the part of me that's supposed to be driving. That's the part of me that's looking at myself aghast at how I'm acting. Okay? So keep that in mind. Initially, you're an observer, watching yourself, watching what's going on. You go, oh my gosh, look at how angry I am. I can't believe it. But there's nothing I can do about it. I'm really that angry. I'm really that afraid. I'm really that whatever, right? That negative emotion. But you have to have some level of awareness that the part of you that's watching is supposed to actually be in charge. Okay, did that help a little bit?
Yes. Okay. I already wrote it down. Fasting, do you recommend once a week? Or what is your recommendation?
I don't have a recommendation. It's different for everybody. I know that there are people that will tell you from the health point of view that, you know, fasting, you know, once a week is good. I mean, the big rage now is this intermittent fasting thing, which is basically just eating only during very few hours during the day and just not eating the rest of the time. They call it intermittent, but I don't think it's so intermittent. I mean, they're not like eating, then fasting, then eating, then fasting or something. They only eat like between 1 in the afternoon and 7 o'clock at night, and then they just don't eat. I mean, they just keep it in a really tight window, okay? And so what they're calling fasting is that once they've used up, they're no longer producing the insulin, you know, because they've used up all of the available sugars, that the body is essentially in a fasting mode. Okay, but I'm talking about fasting where maybe you're just drinking water or something like that, you know, and just leaving it at water or nothing for a period of time, even if it's just one day. I mean, doing that once a week would be great, but you need to, you know, I think you need to do these things on a regular basis. And I think even a longer one, you know, like a 3 or 5 day one would be great for you, maybe once a month or something. These are things that are not just for spiritual purposes, because the one, when you ask me that question, for spiritual purposes, it's on an as needed basis. I feel like I need to connect differently and I need to kind of tune in. Health-wise and physically, I think it's great to do a longer one. And if you want to do a much more long one, you would do that maybe once, you know, once or twice a year. But, you know, at least the 1 day one, you know, once a week is, you know, once every other week or something, just do one here and there. It's just very good for the system to get a break and to reset and do things like that. And by the way, I've been told that, you know, a lot of the allergies and other things in your system can also, or issues in your system can reset if you go on a long enough fast, and you take all that stuff out of the system and let it reset. You know, that's not going to be done in a day. Now, my caution is this: don't extended fast without guidance. And the longer you go, the more two things are important. The longer you go, these two things are important. One, that you have somebody monitoring you in case you don't handle it well, because your system, you know, may crash or something. I mean, it can happen. It depends on what's going on in your system, because the body may go into, you know, what they call like a cleansing crisis or a detoxing crisis, and your body may be, you know, responding in some negative way. And the second thing is, the longer you go, how you break the fast is more and more important. You can't just eat a bunch of food when you haven't eaten a bunch of food. Your system will be very upset with you, okay? Because it will not be ready to handle that. You know, if you've ever watched the show Survivor and they've been living on nothing and then all of a sudden they win a prize with all this food and then they all get sick when they gorge themselves on food because their system was not used to eating like that, okay? And so just remember that. It's very important that you have somebody that's, you know, especially a medical person of some sort that's kind of keeping an eye on you and monitoring you while you're fasting. I'm not talking about 1 or 2 days. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking if you're going to do something 5, 6, 7 days or longer. You know, just make sure you're monitored and be careful. The longer you go, the more you got to break your fast gently, like with just, you know, some broths and easy to digest liquids, and then you go into easy to digest foods and keep it small, and then you build back up to it. Okay? So I've studied this a lot. So, all right. Anything? Okay, so back to live stream.
Quick comment from Yanni. She says, to just let you know, Rabbi, that she'll bake you a Danish for the day that Abba lets her come to Tennessee. From a question from Jess, says, when Rabbi talked about meditation, is it okay to do on Shabbat and or take a short walk to a quiet place to meditate?
Okay, so first of all, for Yanni, Rebbezin would love that Danish. I'm not, a cupcake or Danish type person. So I'd like to try it, though. But that's not really my thing. But Revison would love it, though. So, but I appreciate the thought. The meditation thing, yeah, look, on Shabbat is not a problem if you're going to go walk over to the park or wherever it is and find a quiet place and just sit and, you know, we're not going to go in our workout clothes and do laps around the track, even if it's walking, okay? And we're not going to get on the bike and just ride and get our exercise in. But if you have a short walk to a nature type, you know, place, or something where you can just sit where it's quiet and you can, you know, be out in the sun and the nature and hear the birds and all that kind of stuff, great, do that. And just, but you're not going to go like and walk the trail and do all the, you know, sort of touristy or sightseeing type of thing with it. You're going to find a quiet place. Yeshua did this all the time. He would leave them and go off to by himself, find a quiet place, and pray and meditate. Okay, so I don't have a problem with that. All right. I don't even have a problem if you live by the beach and you're going to go off and, you know, find a quiet place where you can, you know, hear the waves and sit. And, you know, I'm not bringing out, you know, the bathing suit and the blanket and the whole thing. But remember, because you're not there to enjoy the beach. I know. I just put a thought in your head you definitely don't want. I get that. and you can't unthink that. So there you go. But, you know, but you can look. My parents belonged to a beach club in New York and Long Island, where they had a long stretch of beach with a jetty of rocks, you know. And I used to love to go there on Shabbat after Sabbath services, and my parents would want me to meet them there for dinner, but it wasn't sundown yet. And so I would go there and I'd walk out on the rocks where nobody was and just sit and hear the ocean and look at the beautiful sky, and I would have that quiet time and meditate. But I wasn't beaching, you know, I wasn't doing the beach thing. Okay? But it was a quiet place for me to go and to really beautifully be completely aware of the Creator, because that's what I'm surrounded by out there, because that goes out into the water a little ways. And I'm surrounded by the water, and I hear the water, and I hear the seagulls, and all that good stuff. So, you know, but I'm not going to go drive 40 minutes to do this. Okay? I mean, if it's something like there's a park near where you are and you can just walk over there, that's fine. Okay, and do that. But I'm not going to take a whole picnic deal with me and frisbees and other things with my kids and all that, and turn it into a day at the park. Let's not be hypocrites and be clear what we're doing, right? Okay. Matter of fact, the first Shabbat I ever did, I said, that's exactly what I did. I didn't understand Shabbat, even though I know I was a Jew, but nobody I was growing up with ever kept Shabbat. And when I first got approached with the thought of Shabbat, I asked the rabbi at the college I was going to, I said, I don't know nothing about this. He gave me a little thin book, you know, about keeping Shabbat. And something that was in the book or something about it had to do with the idea of not interfering with nature, not creating things or doing things. This is the Jewish way of thinking of it, okay? And so I didn't know what else to do. I didn't want to stay in the house with my family. My parents were there or whatever. I said, you know what? I just took a walk. It was probably about a mile and a half to walk to the park. I walked over to the park, and I just got away from everybody and just tried to get quiet with him to try to figure out this whole vertical thing, which at that time I didn't have much understanding of. But I got the sense that it had to do with the Shabbat thing. And of course, the book said I wouldn't understand Shabbat until I did it. So I said, okay, let's do it. I didn't know what to do, though. I didn't have any place to go for services or any of those things at the time. But I did go to the park. But I went with nothing, right? And I just went and found a place away from all the people having fun and playing or whatever they were doing. And it was just quiet, and it was me and him. And it was good. It must have been, because I'm here now, right? It was a good step one, you know, that led that. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely appropriate. Okay, next.
Anna Kaufman says, verse 35, says, can we call ourselves his taught ones / disciples? What level of love do we have to achieve to consider ourselves his taught ones?
First of all, I like hearing Anna Kaufman. That's the wedding I did. Okay. So, with her new last name. Very nice. Look, it's not about what we call ourselves. He says, if you do this, you're my disciples. Okay? And people will see these things, and they may also decide that you resemble Yeshua, that you're that they clearly see that you're a disciple of Yeshua. Okay? But it's not about you calling yourself something. So it's the same thing with the rabbi thing. You know, to the largest extent, it's not about you calling yourself rabbi. It's other people recognizing you as their rabbi, that you are a teacher, you're their teacher, you have a special anointing and appointing to do those kind of things. Okay? And so that's the whole difference there. So I think that you would be able to call yourself a student, not so much a disciple, if you're studying, as you do, to become like him. And if he is ultimately your teacher, which he should be, I mean, I know I'm trying to be a spokesman for him, but I mean, he's your teacher, then sure, you could say you're one of his students. But discipling is a whole different level, okay? And these are ones who actually did disciple with him, and he was talking to them specifically, okay? If you would do these things, people would know you're my disciples, okay? And so we can, if we're making that effort, know that we're making an effort to do discipling type things that he taught his disciples. So, Anna, hopefully that answered your question. Okay. Gary, another one? Rob?
Okay, from Daphne Neighbors. Says, how to love others like Yeshua loves us while still removing yourself from a bad situation / relationship with others. Is not talking bad about them and not meditating. I think she's trying to say is, how do you love others like Yeshua loves us while still removing yourself from a bad situation, relationship with others? Is not talking bad about them and not meditating on negativity enough?
Okay, let's, and again, this is the kind of stuff we get every day. Most of us find ourselves in these kind of places where we're in challenging situations, bad situations. So first of all, the main point is, and I think you brought that out, whoever wrote that brought out, the idea that you need to get out of the situation. If you're in a bad relationship that's not bearing good fruit, you need to either get to the point where you fix the relationship, or you need to get those toxic people out of your life. Now, if you're married to the person, then there needs to be a way to bring counseling into it or something to make an effort to fix the problem. But if it's just a relationship with the friends or coworkers or members of the congregation, you know, you should be making an effort to say, look, this is not working for me. This is not what I feel comfortable with in our relationship. And you should be very free, by the way, to tell people. If they're going to come into your house or hang out with you and all they're going to do is talk about other people and say all this negative stuff, you know, they're going to be offended when you say it, but you need to say it. You need to say, I don't want to do that here. Then they're going to think you're judging them and all the other baby stuff they're going to do. Okay, and that's just baby stuff. That's immature stuff, okay? Anybody tells you you can't do something, you act like a 5-year-old and you get all upset because that's why I call it baby stuff, okay? Instead of realizing, wow, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And you know, if enough people told them, maybe they'd get the message. Problem is, most of you won't say anything because you're afraid of the reaction. Look, Billy will tell you I counsel this all the time. Fix it or stop whining. That's it. If you're not going to fix it, then be okay with it. But I'm not okay with it. Then fix it. But then I'll lose the friend. Well, then you might lose the friend. I say be mean about it. Just say, look, I realize you don't have a good relationship with the person you're talking about and you've got some issues and things, but that doesn't mean that you need to drag me into it. And I would rather you didn't. Okay? Is what you can tell them something. Now, as far as how do I do the loving thing, you know, correction is loving. Putting boundaries in place is loving. Communicating things that, you know, are hurting the relationship and the other person is oblivious to, but communicating that to them is loving. So let's just make sure we understand that. Did that help, hopefully? I don't know the person who typed that in. Okay, who's next? Ben?
All right. Thank you, Rabbi. And I just want to point out that today I'm actually wearing my safety footwear, so my toes didn't get crushed too bad, but it was enough to get my attention. And my common observation comes from, let this mind be in you that was in Messiah Yeshua. And I was sitting there pondering this, and I was relating it back to what you were talking about in the announcement about Shavuot, and basically, are we prepared for it? And this is something that I was considering to myself as you were doing your teaching, is do I think that Yeshua did not adequately prepare for these feasts? Did he not keep himself Shabbat-centric and feast-centric? And am I doing that in my own personal life? Am I keeping myself aware of his appointed times? And do I consider the connection between that and the fact that these are not over and done with? They're representative of things that are still yet to come. So for me, it was a great encouragement to try to keep that in the forefront of my mind, that I'm constantly aware of the next appointed time that he has for us. So thank you.
Amen. All right, so this will be quick, but two things. I want you to be not just excited about all the things that the feast represent, but I want you to focus on the things that Ben said, which is, are you excited to be with him? Not Ben. I'm excited to be with Ben too, but with him, okay? I told you I do that to myself and I do it to other people. Okay, so, I mean, but are you excited about being with the Creator, being with the Messiah, on an appointed time to meet with them? And are you excited to be with Ben and the rest of us? In other words, as well as the fact that it's a commanded event and it teaches us about the plan of salvation, the whole thing, right? But I mean, we should be excited about coming together at these appointments to meet and be together. And the reason we're not so excited is because we're still not becoming enough like Yeshua. Like I said, we don't even like each other, at least that way. We're friendly as opposed to friends, all right? And it's hard because we irritate each other and we're different than each other and all kinds of other things that you'd be like, I would never have been friends with them if I wasn't stuck in the congregation. Well, why not? You're going to be forever with each other. Well, I wouldn't have chosen that person, but you didn't choose. He did. And don't you believe he put all the right people in the place for you to deal with? That you need to learn to love and they need to learn to love you? Not just the ones you naturally kind of drift towards, okay? And if you find yourself hanging out with the same three people every week, you need to change that, okay? That doesn't mean leave the three. It means add more to the three or have you guys decide purposely, hey, let's go mingle and grab some and meet some more people and maybe we'll have 12 instead of three and then 20. But then everybody starts spending more time together with different people. Okay, next one. Okay, Steve?
Okay.
Look at you guys being all patient, you and Janet, waiting until the middle of this deal. I was just going to close it up and not even give you a chance. Okay, go ahead.
It's okay. I have a couple of things. Some of what you spoke with today touched your in-focus resolve, so this is where that's going to... One of the problems we have in loving each other is we tend to bring up what somebody did in the past, mostly the bad things, all the time. And so to me, wouldn't that be part of unforgiveness? And isn't unforgiveness a part of, isn't forgiveness a major part of resolution?
Look, let's remember that forgiveness has nothing to do with reconciliation or restoration in terms of one proving the other. You can have forgiveness and never do the other two. However, without forgiveness, you can't do the other two, okay? So let's just make sure that we understand the order of those things. Go back to the forgiveness teaching on reconciliation and restoration. So, yes, forgiveness has to be done in every situation. And I'm not going to explain what that looks like. You go back and listen to the teaching. And then as far as restoring a relationship or reconciling with someone, that can only come after forgiveness. And there are steps to that that are discussed in that teaching as well.
Okay, and also in some instances, isn't forgiveness come in layers and we fail to deal with seeing that because we'll see the new hurt or the re-hurting of the same issue as a new issue when it's actually another layer of forgiveness that we didn't address?
I don't know. I mean, because look, we're told forgive 70 times 7. So, I mean, each time something comes up has to be addressed again and forgiven. Okay? But you may want to recognize, like you just said, that it may not be new. It may just be re-triggering. And look, just because something's been resolved, forgiven, even reconciled and restored doesn't mean somebody might not do it again. It still can come up. Now, what you don't want to do is be like, see, I knew it. You didn't change. You're the same, blah, 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 blah. All right? Oh, some of you had those conversations recently? Okay. All right? Because changing what you've been doing your whole life doesn't mean that you're going to, you know, maintain that change perfectly there going forward. Okay, that's just not going to happen. So you have to resist that, you know, tendency to start blasting away when a person goes back to their old ways. Okay? Because, of course, your response is you going back to your old ways. Oh, but he did it first or she did it first. No, don't use that in somebody else to justify your foolishness. Okay? Nobody's action justifies yours. You got to justify your own action. If your action's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. It has nothing to do with what the other person did. Okay.
All right. And then just one other thing I want to make a comment. To me, there's a difference between doing Torah because we're supposed to and doing Torah because we want to. Even the people are doing the same tasks, to me, the fruit would be different because there's a heart issue in it.
All right. Well, look, you're supposed to want to do it. You are supposed to do it. Okay, and somehow it has to be a little of both. You're doing it because he said so, but you want to do it because of your relationship with him. But I want to make sure we don't get into that very bizarre Messianic Hebrew roots dance of, well, you don't have to do it, but we do it because we love him and all that. No, you have to do it. But it doesn't really benefit you if you do it with the wrong attitude. Okay? But covenant requires you to do it. Relationship expects you to do it in a certain way. And it's the relationship that he wants to spend forever with you. So without the right relationship, even if you got the mechanics right and you did what you're supposed to and didn't do what you're supposed to not do, you're still not going to probably get the forever because the attitude's all wrong. Okay? I mean, I could teach anybody the mechanics, and that's not the problem. I mean, I've often made the joke, do you think it'll be easier to take a worldly or a Christian or a Muslim, anybody, any of those other religions out there, you know, but they're wonderfully nice people, their attitude is great, and teach them Torah, like as far as the mechanics, or do you think it's easier to take a really selfish, jerky, whatever it is, you know, Torah keeper and make them a nice, wonderful person? I think sometimes we judge the other people a little harshly. Because it's going to be a whole lot easier come the millennium to teach them some of the mechanics they got wrong, and they're still going to be awesome people. And some of the people here that think they got the mechanics all right are still going to be jerks. And that's not going to work. Okay? This is not what he wants to spend forever with. So it's not just, which is why I don't understand why people battle and really attack people for their mechanics. Okay, so your mechanics, maybe you're right, maybe. All right, so your mechanics are right. What does that earn you? One little check mark. But your attitude's going to wipe it all out. Okay? You know what? Oh, this is going to get me a lot of trouble. Okay, think of it like husbands and wives, because you guys can relate to this. All your Torah observance, check, 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 check. It's like doing all these nice things for your wife. Points, 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 points. But your attitude terrible, and you do just one dumb, jerky thing, whoosh, wipe it all out. I think it's a great analogy. I'm not trying to pick on the ladies or the guys. I'm just saying is, I think in Yahweh's mind, the mechanics are important because you're trusting him and you're obeying him. But I don't think it avails you very much if your attitude is all wrong. Okay? He could teach the stones to do the mechanics. You know? Okay? I'm talking about Jagger and Keith Richards and, you know. Okay. John Paul Jones. Whatever. Okay, so look. I mean, I'm trying to get you to understand that he's not impressed so much with the mechanics just from the mechanics' point of view. He gave you them because they bless you and they keep you safe. Okay? But if it doesn't transform the attitude so you become like him, then there was no point. Okay? So hopefully that makes some sense for everybody. So, Steve, you're right. There's the want to and the supposed to, but it's got to be a synergy of both of those. Okay? You have to accept that you're supposed to, and you also have to understand for a relationship that you have to want to. You have to get to the place where you want to. That's the relational stuff. All right, Rob?
Okay, from Justin and Denise Rodriguez. Says, Rabbi, does all this love in Torah have to do with humbling ourselves and dying to self-preference and preferring others or esteeming others over ourselves?
Absolutely. On this side, did you have a question? And remind me who you are again.
James Nichols.
Hey, James.
Hello. I love being back here. This is first a comment that it has been a domino effect of confirmation after confirmation after confirmation. I love Yahweh for that. My question is, how do I obtain self-awareness to think before I act or speak? What is the procedure of that?
Well, it's just a matter of, again, try to, even when you're doing things that aren't strongly emotional, like you're just having a conversation with me maybe during the Oneg and we're talking, and just be aware of yourself. How am I feeling right now? You know, just be kind of aware of, like, you're watching yourself while you're having the conversation. Practice doing those kind of things. Be aware of yourself, okay? All right, like, and so do it in a time when you're not in a strong emotion, which is much more distracting. It's harder to do it when you're already triggered in some strong emotion. By the way, it could be a positive emotion that got triggered, but still, when it's a big emotion, that's not the time that you're going to really first try to say, okay, let me see if I can wash myself. You're not even going to be thinking. You're in full reaction mode. But when you're just hanging out and talking, see, for example, I have a little advantage right now. I could be somewhat aware of myself talking to you because I see myself on the screen in front of me, okay? So because of that, I can sort of be aware of myself. But if I'm just sitting and talking to somebody, I could be aware, and I try this. Am I looking them in the eye? Am I paying attention? Am I giving them my focus? Am I present? See, I try to be aware of myself while I'm doing it. I don't do that all the time, but the more I do it, the more it becomes a habit. Okay? But like I said, James, do it when you're not under any kind of stress and a negative or positive, like big emotions. Okay? I mean, that's why I've gotten much better when I talk to people. I know some of you are thinking, yeah, a long way to go still. I know. Okay? But I've gotten better because I will actually look the person in the eye, so I know that I'm focusing on them. Okay? Because normally I would drift and look at everything else that's going on while I'm looking at them, part of the ADD problem. But to focus all my attention and be present with them, okay, that's when I'm only doing that because I'm watching what I'm doing. I'm like out here, so I keep putting my hand, like a person hovering over watching what I'm doing, being aware. Are you even listening? I'm asking myself, right? Are you even listening to them? Where's your mind? What are you focused on? Either give them your attention or say, excuse me, and go do something else, okay? But I have to be aware of that. That's the only way I've gotten any better at it, is because I started to be aware of myself. Okay? All right. Rob?
Okay, from Lydia, says, how do I fast for him? I feel like I fast for myself to receive good treatment.
Well, it's not, okay, maybe we got this thing confused. You don't fast for, you know, the above. You don't fast, you're not, except one day a year you do that. When he tells you, you need to fast on Yom Kippur. So you're not fasting for them. You're fasting to hopefully clear out any distractions in your mind, in your body, that's affecting your tuning into them. Okay? So you're not doing it for them. You're doing it for the purpose of enhancing communication and connectivity. Okay? Shira?
Rabbi, thank you. This is awesome. I'll try to be quick. I really appreciate so many great points in this message, but one thing I'm really cueing into is the quiet time with him. And this year has been very transformational for me because I felt that Father had brought my healing process to a place where I was really ready to be quiet and you know, not have to study and get this and journal this, and but just sit and be quiet. And the vibrations of healing music, very soft, can often enhance that. But I'm saying this about meditation because you brought up in John 13, if we do not love ourselves as he loved us, if we haven't been able to receive, and it took me a while to get to that place, but to receive from him that sense of what I've learned since coming into Torah that I didn't know in Christianity. The primary relationship is creator and created being. And when I began to really absorb Genesis 1 and beyond, creator and created being, he made me. He loves me because he made me special. He made me unique. He made me different. And I don't have to be ashamed of my gifts. I don't even have to be ashamed of my faults. I can do this, like you said. You can do this. And so being free from a lot of self-condemnation, a lot of insecurity, I've found it's made it so much easier for me to delight in the uniqueness of others in the body.
Amen. Amen. Thank you. Appreciate that. That's okay. When she comes back, we can maybe squeeze that in there. Okay. Rob, did you have any more? Probably got a lot of them. Okay. We're waiting for the children. I know Shannon had something she wanted to ask, but she went to get the kids. So we'll do a few more until we get the kids in here.
Okay. From Bonnie Blue, or from Leanne, says, being messianic, why during the liturgy do we read love your neighbor as yourself rather than love your neighbor as Yeshua loves us every Sabbath service?
Because the liturgy is coming from the Hebraic, from Leviticus, not from John, okay? And so we're doing certain things that would have been very similar to what would have been done in the synagogues when Yeshua went to the synagogues. It's a good question, though. Okay? It's a good question. And actually, I might be tempted to change the wording on that at some point. But just to understand that, that's what the Hebrew says, and that would have matched Leviticus as opposed to, you know, John. Okay? Shannon, did you have a question? Okay, we're going to go to Shannon here for a second.
So you talked about, like, how we have to take do self-conscious effort, like having the ability to create space, like create that space to think before doing, so you can avoid like getting triggered. What if it's like the other way around, like with me, I'm probably misunderstanding, but like with me, I tend to think a lot more than actually taking action. Like I'm a very, very deep thinker, and I wonder if there's just some kind of a
I know what you're talking about. Okay, so for all you whites out there, I'm not talking about race here. We're talking about that color code personality thing. All right. So those are the white personality, and a little bit the blue too. But really, this is a white personality thing. You tend to overthink. You're slow to react, slow to make decisions, slow to do things, slow. Okay. I love you whites. Okay. All right. So, but take this in the same, use the same technique. Observe yourself overthinking, your hesitancy to make decisions or to actually act upon a decision. And again, the point of the awareness is that you're aware of yourself and then you're watching to decide, is that really what I should be doing? Is that what I really want to be doing? There needs to be a different level of consciousness that's not just hyper-analyzing, so you get paralysis by analysis and you're overthinking things, that says, but just go do something, okay? Which is why I talked about, you know, ready, fire, aim, okay? Sometimes some of you need to just get start, fire, ready, aim, okay, or something, because you have to, you're not doing anything. And better to learn how to adjust to what you do in case it's not exactly the way you wanted it than to never do anything, Okay? So I want you to think of it more in terms of the same awareness that I was telling about people that are not creating enough space. I like that you brought this up because some of you have way too much space. That's all you do is think about things and you never react to anything and you don't do things. But if you're aware of it and you recognize that that's not the way you want it to be, then you can now, while it's happening, stop it and then do something, right? You can sit there going, I'm way overthinking this. And I don't like that I'm overthinking this. And the emotion is going, yeah, but it's keeping us from doing something. And I don't want to do anything. And so you need to remember that this is the driver, though. The observer is the real you watching and seeing whether you agree or don't agree with what you're doing at that second. Okay? So use the same exact technique. Did that answer your question? Okay, good. Okay, I think that we're going to do it with that.